Welcome back to season one of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking the snubs and dubs of the 69th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how are you doing today?
Good evening, Kyle. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Did you watch anything in the last week?
Well, I watched a couple things. First of all, you and I together went and watched The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, we did.
It was pretty fun.
That was pretty fun.
It wasn't my favorite ever Wes Anderson movie. I think I liked Grand Budapest a bit more still, but I enjoyed Royal Tenenbaums. It's still a fun romp and frolic.
Yeah.
A rollick, if you will.
Yeah,
what'd you think of it?
I really liked it. It kind of, it hit all the notes that I thought that French Dispatch should have hit.
And I
found it had the humor and the heart and also some pretty shocking moments. There was, I mean, like at least one really shocking moment that I was like, oh shit, like this is in this type of film. Like,
yeah. Ben Stiller being in there, I need a content warning before he's in a movie when I'm not expecting it. Not that he's bad in any movies. I just need to be ready when he's about to enter the screen. I need to be mentally prepared. And we didn't have that. He's just there. And I didn't think he's like one of the main Wes Anderson universe characters, but he was good in it.
He was good.
Yeah.
I also thought that Bill Murray was a little bit outside of what he normally does. Cause like Bill Murray now, like he can just do the same thing in every movie and everyone will be like, ah, he's great, great actor. He's so funny. Where in this, he seems like, cause he's taken on kind of a role of like a concerned husband.
Yeah.
Which is like not the very quirkiest or laid back, not giving a shit humor type of character that you would expect from him. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it
a lot too. I think it was a really good usage of Bill Murray. It kind of is like a character instead of just Bill Murray being the star of the show.
Yeah.
He's now just like a little side piece, but still killing it.
But that was it? Or did you watch anything else?
No, on Sunday, I was just sitting at my computer playing some games, just finished studying for the day.
Nice.
And I just like sat there, looked down and went, oh, it's time to watch Pig. I'm ready for
it. Oh, shit.
And then I just rented it for like a buck on Amazon Prime and I watched Pig.
You should have told me because I literally bought the Blu-ray and I've been waiting to open it and it has a digital code. Could have watched it for free.
You know what? It was worth a dollar. I don't even mind.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It was good. It was, dare I say, pretty dang good. I really enjoyed it. I did not expect this to be the moment where Nicolas Cage has like just a really good, well-rounded character. Who's really reserved through the entire movie. That's like this character's thing is that they're a quiet, shut-in person. Did not expect that from Nicolas Cage. The man has range. He's still a master.
Oh,
every
yeah.
scene, he's a master. You can't doubt him now.
No, I've actually been really wanting to check it out. Obviously, I bought it, and so I've been kind of sitting on it. Might have to add that to the list and all.
Oh, yeah, that should be moving pretty up to the top. It was a really good watch.
Yeah, okay. That's what I've been hearing. And when I first saw the trailer for that, I think I even sent it to you. And I was like, this could be the stupidest thing ever or maybe good. But
yeah.
Like,
John Wick wishes that this was Nicolas Cage's John Wick. I will not speak on it any further because I want you to witness it. And then we can talk about it at length after that.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, it's a movie called Pig. What did you watch this week?
Well, I started off obviously with The Royal Tenenbaums, but then I moved into more 1996 fluff movies. I watched Matilda.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Matilda?
I would need to look at that. That sounds so familiar. I know what it is, but I can't remember if I've seen it.
It's kind of like a children's movie. Danny DeVito is her horrible father. Their family is awful, but she's really smart and ends up getting the force powers.
Oh, I think I like watched this as a kid. This all sounds familiar, but I don't remember a damn thing about it.
And it's just fun. It's just light and fun.
It's the family comedy.
Yeah. There's some like dated family humor, like like a couple like fat jokes that maybe wouldn't be as accepted nowadays, maybe.
Especially in a family movie.
Yeah.
Normally you don't want to like just brag on someone that's not fun or nice or good.
Yeah, there's an entire scene dedicated to the principal or the headmistress of this school suspects that the fat kid had stolen her cake. And so she brings all the kids into an assembly, sits them up on a stage, and they have to sit there and watch as this kid eats an entire massive chocolate cake.
What the hell? That's not cool. That's really bad.
There's some other stuff, but it's a fun one.
Some good family, wholesome bullying and really reinforcing negative stereotypes about your body. Mm. Family fun comedy drama.
Yeah. I also watched Ghostbusters 2 because I hadn't seen it before. And Wednesday, I went to Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
How was that experience, especially in that order of Ghostbusters 2 and then Afterlife?
Yeah. Ghostbusters 2 is kind of an in one ear out the other sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it tries to emulate the first one in many ways, but it ended up being kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
And there's some funny moments, but it's not Ghostbusters. It's not like the first Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters Afterlife, though, I was really surprised by. It is really fun and really heartfelt and a little emotional.
Wow.
I found myself holding back a tear at certain points. But
crazy.
Like the child actors, so fucking funny. They're so good. There's a kid named Podcast because of his podcast.
Oh, wow.
That's just it. So, I mean, like, he's kind of claimed Podcast as a name for anybody who is trying to do a podcast like us. So
yeah, this is now an audio based entertainment bite.
Yeah,
because we can't use the name anymore. Every detail I hear about Ghostbusters Afterlife makes me hesitant to think it's going to be any good. Mm-hmm. But that's impressive that it's all pulled it off. I think also people love to rag on Ghostbusters and all like and the series, like everything that's subsequent to number one.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of assume like, oh, I'll probably be a forgettable movie. I'm not too worried about that. But if it's good, if it's good, it's good.
It's good. And I think a lot of critics are harping on it because of nostalgia and which is kind of silly because a lot of critics really liked The Force Awakens, which is essentially A New Hope just reskinned.
Oh, yeah.
This movie has some nostalgic elements to it. Don't get me wrong. The whole concept of it is that these children are the grandchildren of one of the Ghostbusters and end up at one of his houses. And they're just like dealing with some of the aftermath of that. And like, obviously there's that connection. And obviously there's some mild spoilers. You're going to see some, if not all, of the Ghostbusters at one point or another.
You can kind of expect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can kind of expect just kind of the nature of it. And so a lot of critics are saying like, oh, it's just nostalgia. Like it's just trying to capture your nostalgia. But like most of the movie is its own thing. It's got its own story with its own characters who are all fleshed out and really good. And I just think that that's sort of a cheap critique, in my opinion.
Especially if you can do it well. It doesn't matter if it's nostalgia. Mm-hmm. It's all about the execution of an idea. It doesn't matter. Like using nostalgia isn't inherently a bad thing.
No.
If a movie sucked and just tried to parade your favorite actors from previous movie in front of it to like get some kind of marketing, that could be like cheap nostalgia. But if it works in the plot, then it's a good device.
Yeah, it wasn't a somehow Palpatine has returned. it was a lot more better than that. So, yeah.
Starting to get the feeling that maybe didn't like the sequel trilogy.
Well, we got one more segment to get through. I put in a special request this week to my stepdad to go to search Costco for this elusive sweet and spicy ketchup chips from Miss Vicky's that seem to be only in Canadian Costco's. And so he said he'd seen it. I trusted him. He came back. Did not have them, but he did buy a different spicy ketchup chip, Hard Bite. So we're going to give them a Hard Bite try.
That's exciting. Now, the spicy ketchup was, I guess, the most important part. So we got like a good percentage of what we were looking for.
Yeah.
This could put Hard Bites on the map, though, because I've never come across this brand before.
I never heard of it. So here we go.
Okay. Entirely forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
This tastes like less ketchup flavor than your average random ketchup chip.
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing a lot of the seasoning. It's mostly potatoey.
Yeah. I'd say of the spicy ketchup chip, I'm getting 90% chip, 5% ketchup, and 5% spicy.
I agree.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
Hard pass. I was about to say that too. Well, this was another episode of Snubs and Grubs. Is this our first forgettable snub and grub?
No. Spicy McNuggets.
Oh, yeah. Those are just fine.
Yeah. Anyways, well, let's get into the real movie we're talking about.
It's hard transition.
So, of course, season one of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 1996. And for episode 16, we are talking about Breaking the Waves. Had you heard of this one before?
Oh, Lord, no. Have you?
No. It was one of those that during my research for the season, it popped up as a well-reviewed movie that had, I think, some Academy Award recognition.
Maybe.
And so it slid in there. And
maybe.
I forgot about it until we even had to watch it. And then I was like, wait, are we not watching The Rock yet? And nope, we have to do this one first. So.
Most movies, even if I hadn't heard of it or seen it before, normally at some point will interact with somehow this movie has like had some vestigial part of it in the popular culture. And I can be like, oh, I think I've seen this before. Like, oh, this is now familiar, this particular one thing that happened. In this movie, not once, not ever did anything that happened remind me of something that I've witnessed before. This was entirely a new, completely virgin movie that there's just no crossover. It's like a perfect, it's like an oasis.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's ever tainted this movie. Nothing from the outside world has entered, and it has not entered into the outside world.
I will say that I am kind of happy that I didn't know anything about it, though. Because if I did know kind of pieces of this movie, I feel like I would have an expectation about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in with absolutely no expectation. And
if,
so,
yeah, if at any point I had known what would be coming up, I would be so bored.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I did not know at any point what was kind of coming next. That was really working for making this movie length feel worthwhile.
Well, we'll get to your thoughts in a second.
We'll get to that. That's just a little snippet, a little taste.
Yeah. If you are interested in Breaking the Waves, I've included the links to the physical media related to this movie in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow that general link. It'll help out our show in the process. Reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation for Breaking the Waves. So if you haven't seen it, go ahead and do so if you want to. But without further ado, we're going to get into it. Go ahead.
In a small and religious coastal town, a simple, devoutly religious Scottish woman, Bess McNeil, finds a partner and an oil rig worker from Norway, Jan Nyman. However, the relationship grows strained when Nyman breaks his neck in a horrific work accident on the rig and becomes paralyzed. Unable to perform sexually and suffering mentally from the accident as well, Jan convinces Bess to have sex with other men, which she comes to believe is God's work. This is directed by Lars von Trier. Is that at all the correct way to say that?
Yes, that is the correct way to say it.
We did it, folks. No practice, can't even try. Still pulled it off. This is written by Peter Asmussen, Lars von Trier, and David Peary. This is starring Emily Watson as Bess McNeil.
Easiest name to say so far.
It's going downhill from there. Stellan Skarsgård as Jan Nyman, and Katrine Cartledge as Dodo McNeil. This has a runtime of a hefty 159 minutes. Oh, baby. Yeah. And was released on May 18th, 1996. So Kyle, what did you think of Breaking the Waves?
I have very mixed feelings.
Yes.
Because I liked some parts of this movie, but I hated the pace.
Yeah.
There was points where I literally looked at the runtime and I was like, how is there an hour of this movie left?
Yep.
I had no clue how it was just kind of dragging on at points. And there's, I think it's entirely on the editing. The editing is a very distinct choice.
Yep.
But it didn't work for me in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Performances, though, awesome.
On
really good.
Point.
And there's parts of this movie, especially near the end, that actually surprised me and kind of turned me around at the last bit. But yeah, what about you? What do you think?
Definitely enjoyed some parts of the style because it's a very distinct style. Everything was carefully handpicked. However, they handpicked the guy with the laziest hand in all of Hollywood to film this thing. I understand that they wanted to go with pure like handycam.
Yeah.
But they went with handycam while this guy was doing a workout because it is everywhere. You can do handycam while kind of pointing in one direction. You don't need to 360 the whole thing by accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pacing was interesting. Because I was always interested enough in what was going on that I didn't feel too bad. But at one point, and just to reveal how awful my schedule has been lately, I think I started this at about 11:30 p.m.
Oh, no.
Because I was doing homework before that. And at one point, I didn't know what time it was, but I felt like there was maybe another 30 to 40 minutes left in the movie. and it was at like a kind of slower point. So I paused it to like just go brush my teeth and whatever, so I can just go straight to bed when this is over.
Yep.
And there was another hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so mad.
I think I had that same moment. I paused to go like make a tea or something. And I went and I was like, how the fuck is there so much movie left?
Dog, I could have cried. I was so mad. I was so tired. Yeah. And there was so much movie left to go. Fuck.
It is a lot of movie.
But I didn't hate it. There was some really good parts to this. I enjoyed most of the narrative, but it really did drag on. Like, they could have cleaned this up quite a bit.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was so much in here that didn't need to be. It didn't necessarily hurt that it was in there, but you could have gone for a way more succinct movie and had it still benefit from that. But, I mean, overall, it's a really interesting movie.
It is an interesting movie, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely give it that. And, like, there is a filmmaker behind this movie. It's definitely like an auteur type of thing where Lars von Trier is making these decisions deliberately. And there is probably a very safe version of this movie somewhere that's like edited, you know, very concisely and to the point that it's still probably good because the story is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I guess you kind of miss that distinct voice, but then also that distinct voice will fall flat for some people just because of how long it can seem sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if they went for a popular route with this movie, I wouldn't like it.
Mm.
The way that they like made the characters and the interaction was very like unusual in a big blockbuster film that can actually make money.
Yeah.
But in this like kind of more artsy one that was really built to be like a filmmaker's film, like it felt like a better product because of that. Even if it wasn't the most enjoyable thing to watch. But I always respect when someone has a vision and then they go through and do it. I respect that even if I didn't particularly enjoy it. So if it kind of got watered down to be popular, I wouldn't like it as much.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you want to hit plot time?
Let's hit that plot. Let's
do the plot.
I've abbreviated it quite a bit. So there might be some stuff that's missed, but the length it's strained.
Yeah.
It's stretched a little thin sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I looked at the Wikipedia plot for this, and it's like three paragraphs.
That's all it needs to be.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So I'm giving a little more detail than that. But here we go. We open on Bess telling the old men of her church that she is going to marry Jan. Jan works on the oil rig and is considered an outsider to these people, and so they express a fair amount of scrutiny and a little misogyny to Bess. We enter chapter one. Bess gets married. And well, that's kind of exactly what happens.
Spoiler alert. Bess got married.
Yeah. Jan returns from the rig late, and Bess is already in her wedding dress. The wedding commences, and the outsiders grossly mingle with the old churchmen. This was just kind of fun contrast to start.
I really enjoyed it. That was one of my first notes I put, other than very shaky cam to start.
Yeah.
It was not just to start. but that was actually a really fun interaction between like the outsiders and their wacky, zany beer drinking ways. And then the village insiders who are very like conservative, very like soft spoken and like strict with how they operate. And it was really fun. I had a good time with that.
Yeah. And there's this one interaction where this guy's challenging this church guy to like a drinking contest.
Yeah.
And he like downs the beer in the can and then watches the like man pour a glass of something down it. And then the oil rigger crushes it in his hand. And the fucking church guy shatters a glass in his hand and just like picks out the glass pieces. This fucking madman.
They are hardy people. If you thought oil rig workers are hardy people, they probably are. That's a tough job. This man has just smashed glass, pulled it out of his hand, and probably pocketed some to eat later. This was just the intro to a very large series of increasing dares that probably just couldn't make the cut because they're too graphic because this guy was willing to go too far for the bit.
Man, I don't think anything didn't make the cut. That's true. Much of this movie that was like a lot. We also get a little backstory from Dodo McNeil. She had married Bess's brother, who later died, but stayed after his death because of her love for Bess and her family. After this, Beth and Jan have sex in the bathroom.
Yeah. That was kind of a fun scene because it kind of building on showing how conservatively religious this place is. Bess had never had sex before, so she didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah. But
Jan showed her the ropes.
But I mean, like, she wants it. Like, she's like, take me now.
Oh, yeah.
And Jan doesn't come off as like a gross, creepy guy here because he's just like, are you sure? Like, we could go somewhere more romantic.
Yeah.
After that, we enter chapter two. So that was quick chapter one.
It was a quick little fling. Yeah.
which is life with Yan, and we are promptly exposed to some Stellan Skarsgård penis.
Oh, very quickly. this is also why I'm pretty sure that was their first time having sex, because he does like a little show and tell with his body, because she's never seen like a man undressed before.
Yeah, he does the little like shake of his hips.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, you get one shot at this, and he went for everything that he could try. A little helicopter, a little sway back and forth. All the brakes were pulled for this performance.
Yeah, good for Stellan Skarsgård. He's going places.
Oh, he is.
This section is mostly them just having fun and having a lot of sex. But we also get our first sort of conversation that Bess has with herself, where she's channeling God, basically. So she's like praying to God, but also speaking on his behalf, basically. And this happens quite often during the film.
It's good to always have a pal with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, always got a walkie-talkie open.
Mm-hmm. Also in this chapter, Bess tells Jan to go witness a funeral, since only men can attend funerals. At the funeral, they're condemning this dead man to hell. Something that comes back a little bit later. We also get a first look at Bess's outbursts and her inability to control her emotions, as at dinner, Bess leaves after facing the fact that Jan is going to have to go back to the oil rig soon. Dodal also says to Jan, you could get her to do whatever you wanted. So,
Which is a little foreshadowing.
Yeah. And then also Dodo straight up says that Bess isn't right in the head. So suffering from some mental illness, clearly, and is rightfully concerned that this person that she's never really met could be taking advantage of her, somebody that she really loves. But yeah, Jan then leaves on the helicopter to go back to the rig, and Bess runs and just opens the door. Like, okay, that's not dangerous.
Now, I could be wrong here. I'm not a pilot. Don't those normally have locks?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. So
he wanted that.
Yeah.
he was leaving the door open. So he has a big moment. Jan was looking for that one.
Yeah. With that, we enter chapter 3, which is Life Alone. Not much to start on this one, but Bess falls asleep at a phone booth waiting for Jan to call. They finally do get on the phone together, and she initiates the weirdest phone sex conversation.
Yeah. It's so funny because I don't know if using pecker is supposed to be like, that's such a, like a funny childish way to say that, because I think it's Scotland?
It's Scotland,
in? I think it has a different context than it does here, but it works even better here, where it's like, well, if you use pecker, I don't know if you're ready to have phone sex. I think you need to brush up on your dictionary first.
For sure. She like hesitates. She's like, you're prick.
It's like, you're coming in a little too innocent to this. Yeah.
In another bit of foreshadowing, a friend of Jan returns early to Scotland due to an injury to his hand. Bess goes to church and prays for Jan to come home through another conversation with herself. Well, Jan does return early, as an equipment failure on the rig results in Jan getting a serious knock on the back of the head. Jan is airlifted back and rushed into a surgery that Bess just watches, just stands there and watches.
Got a pretty open door policy. I don't know if a lot of hospitals would allow that to happen, or have like the setup that you can just kind of be in the hallway and looking in on that.
Yeah. But and like I think the doctor was trying to get her to not watch, because obviously it's quite disturbing to sit there and watch your husband be cut open on his head. But
also, good luck getting her out of there. You might as well let her watch, because if you don't, she'll just barge in and ruin the surgery and kill Jan anyways.
Yeah, and then she prays that Jan will live.
So far, 3 for 3 in the praying.
Yeah. And that's a major point of this movie, is just the fact that she's praying, things are happening, maybe not in the way that she wants, but it's happening.
I mean, 3 for 3 in the loosest sense, that it's like the monkey paw way, where when you wish something to happen, the worst possible outcome of that thing happening occurs.
Mm-hmm.
But Jan's back.
Yeah, he's back, and he's going to live, because after the surgery, the doctors tell Bess that he will live, but they suggested this quality of life might not be worth living for. He's going to be paralyzed.
In Scotland.
Yeah. God. Bess leaves to talk to God again and blames herself for praying for Jan to come home. And then we enter chapter 4, which is Jan's illness. The most important bit of this section is that Jan urges Bess to take another lover, since he can't give her that anymore, which results in her getting upset, not caring for Jan, and Jan attempting to commit suicide. When Bess returns home, Dodo has taken Jan to the hospital. Jan has another surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he wakes up, Jan changes the framing of his original lover request, now saying that he wants Bess to go make love to a man and tell him about it because it's for him. It's the only thing that's going to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on this?
So what I thought originally is that when he was talking to Bess, he wanted her to go take another lover for her sake.
Yes.
Because he felt like, you know, kind of sad that he couldn't do anything to pleasure her while paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted her to kind of move on, but she never would. Not while Jan is living and breathing right there. She would rather just sit by his bed 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's clearly a change at some point where Jan does want her to do this for him, or maybe he doesn't, but because he's in such a sickly state that he just kind of is legitimately confused.
Mm.
And because he switched things around, because the second time when he says like, oh, I want you to do it for me. Previously, Dodo had talked to him and said she would do anything for you. So he's trying to reframe this as I want you to do this for yourself. But I'm going to say this as I want you to do this for me.
Yeah.
Because that's going to get you to actually go and do this rather than letting you do that.
Mm.
But at some point, it clearly changes to where this is now a toxic thing that he wants her to do.
Yeah, I'm totally in the same mind as you, where like this is clearly him thinking he's doing something for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they set this up in the way that like in chapter two, where they're just like having sex all the time.
Oh,
like,
constantly.
It's like all they're doing, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're having phone sex conversations, and it's just, everything seems to be very sexual between these two. So when Jan comes back and he's paralyzed and now he's not able to do that sort of stuff with her, he even tells her to not wear revealing clothing because it upsets him too much.
Yeah.
It makes sense that he would want her to move on
mm-hmm.
in a physical way, but maybe not in an emotional way because she's clearly the only one that's caring for him at this point, except for Dodo.
Yeah.
But Dodo's not really responsible for him.
No, she just works at the hospital. I'm sure she likes him more than the average patient, but still, she just works at the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I think this starts off innocent enough, still a little bit strange. Maybe that's not the best word, but like,
yeah,
it is an odd request just to tell him, her to like go find a lover instead of like, you need to just go like move on from me. Mm-hmm. I want to die, basically.
Yeah, he never really took a soft approach to bringing this up. It was kind of, oh, you know, go have a lover for yourself. Oh, I don't want to do it for yourself? Then do it for me. And never like a back and forth of what she actually wants.
Yeah.
It's just he assumes that's what she wants. But there's a couple things that throughout the movie, they don't tell you what the correct answer is. Like with all the times that she prays for something to happen, it normally does happen.
Yeah.
But obviously it's caused by something else happening. But it doesn't make a statement on whether or not her prayers are being answered or if not, although quite clearly like, things aren't going her way.
Yeah.
Nothing's quite ending up the way she wants it to.
No.
Do I also want to drop in one quick thing?
Sure.
When she prays for Jan to come back, he was 10 days from returning anyways.
Yeah.
So that's got to eat her up. If she thinks that her prayers brought him home in a medically induced coma, 10 days early. Ooh.
Well, and yeah, like this kind of shows her, I guess, immaturity and some of the issues that she's feeling with just like the strong emotions that she feels
mm-hmm.
and not really being able to regulate them because she wants Jan home so badly that she's willing to, you know, in any way to have him back, even if it's 10 days,
mm-hmm.
which is not long at all. And mm-hmm. so that, I guess, really kind of went to show her character in that way.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Because even she says that to herself, you know, emulating God when she's having a conversation. She says, like, it's only 10 days, like, he'll be back soon. And she's like, no, I just want him now, please.
Yeah.
But anyways, we get into chapter 5, which is doubt. Bess passes out after hearing Jan's request and wakes up with Jan in another surgery. Bess goes back to church to talk to God, who tells her that she needs to prove to him that she loves Jan. Then he will let Jan live. Bess then goes to the doctor's house to dance, quotes, ends up stripping naked and laying on his bed and then crying when he won't have sex with her.
When he doesn't like destroy every moral possible rule for being a doctor.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a hard sale for her.
Mm-hmm. And this character, like the doctor, he's a pretty solid and true character for the most part.
Yeah.
Except there's like later, like he does kind of confess love for Bess.
Didn't get that one.
No, neither.
It never really came across because I think it works well early. It kind of does seem like he's flirting with her a little bit. So when he is her first choice for some extramarital sex, it makes sense because I kind of get in the vibe like that could work. And then when he doesn't do that, I thought, oh, that's a cool kind of switch around.
Yeah.
But then he confesses his love later in the movie, but it doesn't mean anything to anyone. So I didn't really get that.
That was just kind of tacked on, I think. I think it would have even been better if like he was just a doctor trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, it would have been better.
Yeah. But anyways, she gets rejected. Bessim returns to Jan to tell him a story about what she wanted to happen with the doctor as if it did happen. But Jan sees through the lies. He then gives her an idea of meeting a man on a bus. So she then goes to a bus and gives a really sad hand job to an old guy at the back of the bus. Afterwards, she exits the bus, gets sick, and returns to Jan to tell him about it. The next day, Jan is off his respirator.
Yeah.
Sad, sexy miracle.
That. I think this is kind of the slow descent into Jan doing this to almost punish her or to like to control her. Because this is the first time that he planted the idea, really, and contributed back to this idea again, is the bus thing, because he knows that she buses there and back.
Yeah.
So he's going to plant that idea of like a quick little bus handy.
Yeah.
To get it to happen. And then when she does do it, he's like, oh, that's not good enough anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this maybe it might have been like his way of getting her to take baby steps.
Yeah.
Like instead of like just going laying naked and having sex with the guy, like just like doing some sort of quick hand action in the back of a bus. But yeah, still like.
Got to foreplay that.
Yeah.
You can't just lay on the bed naked for the doctor.
No.
It's like the old saying goes, you got to give a handy to the old man at the back of a bus. You want to save your dying husband.
Is that the old saying?
That's the old saying.
Wow. Chapter 6 is Faith. Dodo is worried about Bess, who is falling into the delusion that she is saving Jan's life by doing these sexual acts, and just calls her stupid.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of worrying for Dodo, because obviously she's kind of at the end of her rope here. Like she obviously cares for Bess and knows that she's suffering from mental illness and that this guy is manipulating her, but like, what could she even do at this point? Oh, yeah.
Like, Dodo is all that Bess has at this point.
Yeah.
Like, biggest fan base, really her life coach. And when your coach starts throwing punches at you, too, you've kind of lost the whole audience.
Yeah.
You're kind of losing people to talk to at that point.
Yeah. Bess ignores these concerns and gets dressed up, goes to a bar, and meets a man to have sex with behind a shed. However, on her way to this sort of sexual encounter, one of the old church boys sees her traveling with the hookup and gets a little suspicious.
Mm-hmm. She did completely change her look for this, too.
Yeah.
Not that it was needed. She's already beautiful and in Scotland and went to a bar with 100% dudes, 0% women. She could have looked like anything and had just as high of a success rate. But
yeah.
I mean, she wanted a good, fun night out. Good for her.
Mm-hmm. And like, does she know that she was trying to be kind of a hooker?
I think she wanted that vibe to make it easier.
Yeah, because the guy responds when she sits down with him with how much.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know if this was maybe she was emulating that or maybe that was her first idea that this is an actual thing that, like, people expect or people will just pay for. And obviously, she's just giving it out for free.
Yeah.
Because she wants to prove to God that she loves Jan.
Mm-hmm.
But then later she goes and tries to find other prostitutes to emulate.
I think that's the idea. Maybe it slips in her mind that she can just make a quick cash too. But that's probably the easiest way to have sex with random strangers is you find the people looking to have sex with random strangers.
Yeah.
Probably your easiest bet.
Well, and maybe that's also why she dressed the part.
Yeah.
To kind of emulate the type of person that would be willing to be paid to have sex with strangers.
That was my kind of vibe I was getting.
Jan has another operation and flatlines on the table, but is resuscitated. Bess's mother gets word of the suspicious activity from the old church boy and warns her that she could be cast out if this behavior continues. Dr. Richardson also shares his concerns about Bess's actions, telling her that he thinks this is just Jan being a bit of a sick creep. He also tells Bess that he loves her. This was just, the random drop here.
He didn't need to at all, but then he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange. But also valid concerns prior to his confession of love.
Oh, he came with a good slate of homework done.
Yeah.
And then really fumbled on the way out when he's like, oh, I love you too. Oh, shoot, I've already lost this one. Might as well go for the Hail Mary.
Bess goes to pray, but she can't reach God. So she goes to the docks where she requests to be taken to a ship for sexual services. She's taken to a ship that the other girls don't go to, which results in her being attacked. She manages to get away by taking a gun and locking the attackers onto the boat. Jan decides that he doesn't want to do any more operations, even though his condition isn't likely to improve without surgery. After this decision, Dr. Richardson advises Jan to have Bess admitted to a mental health facility for her own sake. Jan agrees and signs the paper of release. Chapter 7, we enter Bess's sacrifice. This is the last actual chapter. Mm-hmm. After Bess's attack, she goes to the church and speaks, which of course she is not allowed to do in this community because she is a woman.
Yeah, but you go, girl. You break those gender norms.
Yeah.
Someone had to do it.
Mm-hmm. And she was like speaking out against what they were saying too, mm-hmm. which, you know, power to you.
She maybe could have worked on the presentation though. Yeah. She came back and like ripped up clothes after just trying to prostitute herself,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, nothing wrong with that. But you're not making a strong case when you're coming to the church like that. You're starting off on your side of the field.
Yeah, no. So this results in Bess getting cast out, which ends up resulting in her being, So these actions result in Bess getting cast out, which in turn results in her being ignored, stalked, having stones thrown at her, and even not being let into her house by her own mother.
Yeah, that was a harsh one.
That was a harsh one.
That one's got to sting a little bit. So do all the rocks. There was also a lot of rocks coming her way.
There was a lot of rocks.
I think this is one of the scenes that you really could have cut. She spends a lot of time getting chased with rocks thrown at her, mm-hmm. and you kind of get it on the first go around of that. And then she goes to the church and collapses. And then Dodo comes to talk to her.
Yeah.
And then she leaves. A lot of that you didn't need. That was kind of like, to bring a dumb reference into this, when Family Guy, when Peter does like the stupid thing where he hurts his knee and he rolls back and forth going, a lot. That was a lot of this scene. That was the vibe I was getting. We get it. She's cast out.
Yeah.
I want to go to bed.
Yeah. I can imagine that at this point in the movie, you would be like, come on, just fucking hurry up.
So tired, Lars. So tired.
You did kind of sum up parts of that.
It's fine.
I actually did some stuff kind of out of order there just because it made sense to explain that way. Bess tries to go see Jan, but is arrested and taken into mental health care. She manages to escape the vehicle, though, and with nowhere else to go, returns to the church and passes out.
It seems like a 101. If you are two police officers bringing one person into custody and you need to go and talk to someone, only one of you should probably leave the vehicle.
Yeah.
That seems like a classic 101 case, but these guys did not. They skipped that one. They slept in one morning.
Yeah.
Because they both just like leave her alone and then she just walks away.
Yeah, no, she straight up just like zipped out of there.
Yeah.
Dodo arrives at the church and helps Bess up. When she's awake and well, Bess tells Dodo to pray for Jan to rise from his bed and walk. Bess then goes back to the big ship she escaped from and has another conversation with God on the way. We then cut to Dodo performing the requested prayer on Jan's bedside and then receiving a phone call. Bess has been horribly assaulted on the ship and is in pretty rough shape. She asks to see Jan when she gets into the hospital on the stretcher, thinking he might be better. Jan is not, and as a result of that, Bess realizes she may have been wrong about the godly influence and promptly passes away.
Yep. I mean, I too, when I realize I might be wrong about something, would rather die than admit that.
Mm-hmm.
So Bess is really a real one here for taking the hard way out of being incorrect about something. I admire the dedication to that.
Yeah. And I mean, that was probably the last like emotional strain. Like, I feel like she might have been able to muster the willpower to hang on if Jan mm-hmm. had recovered, or at least seen Jan recover.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then she does not. And this was like really hard to watch, especially because of Dodo's performance.
Yeah, it's good.
She really sold that. And this is where the shaky cam actually kind of worked.
Yes.
For me, because it kind of put you in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was quite effective.
Yeah. And all the scenes where you wanted a lot of chaos, mm-hmm. it worked great.
Yeah, exactly. We then go to the epilogue. Dr. Richardson is attempting to gracefully explain Bess's actions and her condition to the court, which just ends up sounding as fucked up as it was.
Yeah, I think I didn't quite understand the full context of this, but I think he's defending the actions he took in regards to Bess as well. Because I'm sure they probably had an inquiry into how this woman who was supposed to be committed ended up dying like 8 hours later or like 12 hours later or something. But clearly some things are missed.
I mean, it's not really on Dr. Richardson. It's
no.
Like, actually, this is probably on those two police officers that did not take
on
the due diligence.
On the two bumble nuts who didn't lock the doors. Just one person go to talk to the dude working the toll.
Yeah, they're fucking fired. That's for
sure.
Yeah,
they're done. They're canned.
But I think this is also to kind of get the scope of like what Bess was like in the medical opinion for the church to make their decision for her funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But in the biggest kind of what the fuck moment of this movie, we pan to Jan, who's just up.
He's
just
walking.
Well, I was like, holy, like this was the one moment of this movie that I was like, what the fuck? Like, what is happening? What was your reaction to that?
I half expected that it could go that way. I was kind of ready for her sacrifice of dying to, in an ironic twist, result in him walking afterwards.
Yeah.
So when this happened, I was like, okay, that was one of the two possibilities that were kind of equally weighted in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you kind of have to wonder, I mean, as a filmmaker, if he's going for the idea that there is godly influence and that this was some sort of miracle that was as a result of Bess's actions and her dedication to her husband that was proven to God.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also just like a horrible thing to see and watch happen. And when Jan was walking, I was more sad for the fact that he was now going to have to live with what happened to Bess, basically, and what he kind of encouraged.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it didn't really shock me, because every point in the movie, everyone had gotten monkey pawed so hard that this kind of made sense, that the worst outcome for everyone involved is that Bess dies from this and then Jan's just up and walking again.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is.
Yeah, he's just there. But I'm kind of wrap up with the church attempting to condemn Bess to hell at her funeral, but Jan and his oil rig buddies steal Bess's body and bury her at sea. To finish, despite nothing showing on the ship's sonar, massive church bells ring in the sky, and that's how we close Breaking the Waves.
She finally got her church bells, and she only had to die for them and then have her corpse dropped into the water after just sitting around for a couple days.
Yeah.
The hard way to do that, in my opinion. Man, I felt for Bess. There's one thing that you had mentioned, how after she kind of realized that she might be wrong, then she kind of gave up hope on living.
Yeah.
But she had been put through so much, and it's never clear what her path should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because just story-wise, they're setting it up that every time she does have sex with some random dude, Jan does get better. And in the periods where she's not doing that, he's getting worse.
Yeah.
So you understand logically, in a way, where she's coming from. But everyone is punishing her for doing this. So she's kind of tormented that way because the church doesn't want her to do this, but she feels she has to. And then she loses Dodo, who's upset with her for doing this.
Yeah.
And then the doctor commits her because she's doing this, but she's so lost in her anguish, not knowing how to help her husband, who she so dearly loves and feels responsible for, that she'll do anything to do to save him. So even though she's under all these pressures, she's just going to do it anyways. And then you find out, whoop, didn't need to do any of that.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Yeah, and like, so I think clearly the stance that they're taking is there is God.
I think, especially the church bells.
Yeah,
that one kind of seals the deal.
Yeah, and so, like, I guess it makes her decisions correct, and I think she's probably happy in the result that Jan is up and walking and that he could live, even though, you know, he's going to be haunted by that fact for the rest of his life, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I, like, the characters are really complicated here.
They are.
And like you've already mentioned that like Bess is making very complicated choices. Jan is also a very complicated character because, on one hand, it's really fucked up what he's asking her to do.
Yeah.
But in his head, like, he wants her to go and have a life, like have, you know, fun, enjoy another lover. And like, he can't give that to her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it gets to a point where it is becoming a risk to her and her family life, her community.
Yeah. And it starts off in a sweet place that he just wants her to go be happy for herself.
Yeah.
But it only starts going dark the longer that he is like unwell, both physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. The doctor says a couple times that when people are in this state, like they're not themselves.
No.
They are going to do evil, sick things because of the state that they're in. He's constantly drugged up. His quality of life sucks.
Yeah.
So I don't even blame him. It's not really his fault. He was not responsible for his actions, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, he like admit, like he accepted death.
Oh, like, he wanted to die times. For a lot of that.
Yeah. And so I think he just wanted Bess to get used to maybe the fact of like going out and having other lovers. Because I mean, the first time he asks her to do that and she freaks out, he just tries to commit suicide by dousing himself or like overdosing on pills.
Yeah.
And then like, obviously he's, you know, resuscitated and has another surgery and survives for a little bit longer. And as things progress, like it gets better. But like, yeah, like, especially in the end when he was like, I don't want to do any more surgeries.
Yeah.
And I don't want, like, Bess is clearly making she's clearly at risk. Mm-hmm. Going to admit her. Like, that was his choice. Obviously, Dr. Richardson strongly urged it. But at the end of the day, he decided to do that,
yeah.
Which was maybe for the best for her. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think he also, like, accepted in that moment that it is best for Bess to not see him until he died. Because every time that they were in contact with each other, he would cause her to do something even worse for her own health.
Yeah. Yeah, he became a pretty poor influence in a way, even though maybe it was from good intentions.
It started there and then go, I mean, hey, it's not drugs.
No, it's not.
At least at the end of the day, he didn't want her to do drugs.
Yeah, and I think Dodo is like an interesting character, but she's not as complicated as the two. Like, she's pretty straightforward in that she just loves Bess.
Yeah.
But obviously she's coming from a place where she was also an outsider because her husband was from this community. I think she was outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
She was accepted into the community. Now her husband is dead. She's an outsider of her own. And so she can kind of relate to Jan in that way and also loves Bess for continuing to accept her. But it also shows the difference in her reaction when the entire community decides to cast Bess out. The like head church guy sees, what is he even called, the head church guy?
I don't
the priest
sure.
When Bess is like collapsed on the like on the floor, the rocks in front of the church, he just stares at her and then walks away. But like,
what do you know about that? All right, kids, let's go.
Yeah. And even like Bess's own mother like rejects her when the community and the church decide that that is what's going to happen. But then Dodo is the only one to actually come and help her out. And I think she would have continued to help her out had Bess continued to be alive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Dodo, I don't think, was nearly as committed to the church life as Bess's mother was. I don't think it was much of a question that she would put Bess first.
Yeah.
Do you want to move into the reception?
Let's get into the reception.
Let's get into it. All right, Kyle. Give me what you think the people and the critics think about this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it might be high critically, but lower audience wise. Might even go like, I could see this being like a high 85, maybe even to like a 90 critic, just on like kind of what it is. And then I would even say like a 60 to 65 audience.
Well, parts of what you said are correct. You nailed the Rotten Tomato critic score, 85%.
Oh,
right on the money. Audience, 91.
What?
Yeah. 91% audience love on Rotten Tomatoes. Only 85% critics.
That actually surprises me. Mm-hmm. I thought that just given the nature of what this movie is and how it's shot, I thought that some audiences would be more divided on this one.
Hmm. Moon ran along to IMDb, 7.8.
Yeah, that's fair.
Solid score. Metacritic, 76.
That's
so once
high.
Again, yeah. First of all, a really good Metacritic score, but still the audiences liked it more than the critics. But overall, people goddamn loved this movie.
Yeah.
That's a lot of high scoring.
That is quite high scoring, yeah.
But you know what a lot of people didn't do is watch this movie.
Oh, yes.
It might have been that 91 out of 100 scores were positive because this did not make cash.
Oh, okay.
So box office, clean $4 million. On a budget of $7.5 million.
Oh, no.
So we lost a little bit in there.
Yeah. Oh, 7.5. That's quite high.
That is pretty high. None of it went into like editing, cutting scenes. That didn't happen. A lot of it probably went into shooting a 2 and a bit hour movie, almost 3 hours of film. But yeah, pretty big budget. no return.
Yeah.
All just creep past 50% return on that. So breaking the waves didn't make waves.
Breaking the waves, try breaking even.
Oh, that was better. Box office number for the year peaked at 158.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of low.
So here's Kate. Of the $4 million it made, how much do you think of that came internationally?
Oh, interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Danish movie.
A Danish movie.
Mm-hmm.
Set in Scotland.
Set in Scotland.
Probably mostly screened in the UK. I'm going to say like maybe $1 million, $2 million. That's kind of half, isn't it? Yeah, I'd say $1 million.
$25,000 came from international screenings.
What?
The rest of it. So 4 million or like 3,990 whatever,
yeah,
came from domestic box office and 25,000 came from international box office.
That's great. That's surprising.
That's weird, right?
Yeah.
I saw that and was really shocked by that. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. You'd think that this would be a much bigger success in other countries, mm-hmm, like in the UK and all around that area, and not in the domestic regions.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's strange, hey? I don't know. Couldn't tell you, but them's are the figures.
Them's are the figures. What about our scores?
Let's get into our scores.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, hit me with your enjoyment.
Shit. Three.
Three. Oh, yeah. I feel you. You know, it's a good, strong movie.
Mm.
God, is it long?
Oh my God.
God, yes. Is it long?
That's the thing, is there's some gems in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's parts that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
But oh God, is it hard to get through sometimes?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also gave it a three.
Perfect.
A lot of watching this, I'm like, I enjoy this, but I feel like we've done this 7 times already, this movie. Don't know why we're swinging back for an 8th time of doing this.
Yeah.
But all right. Craft. What would you give it for the craft?
Hmm. I don't like the editing.
No.
It is a choice. It's clearly a choice. Mm-hmm. And there's some nice shots in here. Costumes are good. Stellan Skarsgård's hairline can't be helped.
Damn. Ooh.
I mean, I'm not one to complain about a hairline.
Look, that was not the collection of hairs on Stellan Skarsgård's body that I was really looking at. There's another part of him that does not have to worry about any hairlines.
I think I might go with like I think I'm gonna stay safe at 3 again.
3. All right. I gave this 3.5.
That's fair.
Yeah. There were some really cool shots, and I like that they had an image and for the most part went for it.
Yeah.
But God, that shaky cam. Just get someone with more just steady your hands.
All right? Get a tripod, please.
Yeah, like
yeah.
We have Adderall at this point. Consider it. Execution.
This is probably where it shines for me because the acting is phenomenal. It's like really good.
It is really good.
There's some really good writing in here. So I think I might even go, I'm thinking 4, maybe even as high as 4.5. No, I'm going to say 4.
You're going to lock in a 4? I gave this a 3.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I was sitting there and when I was done with it, I'm like, that's a 3. Even though I really liked the acting in it, I don't know. It's just something, I think I know that this is not in this category, but I feel like the editing style really got in the way of what they were trying to do. And there was a lot of things that because of the choices they made in making this movie distracted from my enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
So fair. I kind of like, it ended up coming down to the execution of it, like the screenplay. Chop some of that out. So much of that's not needed in there,
mm-hmm,
that it kind of made the performances not even as worthwhile because it was hindered by the story. So I'm giving that a 3.
That's fair. Yep.
Rewatch.
1.
Yeah, I don't have enough time to rewatch.
Jesus Christ. And it's like, just difficult to get through.
Get to the point. Yeah, I get this 1.5. So we're okay, in the same ballpark there.
Although I couldn't imagine bringing myself to watch this movie again.
Yeah.
For any other reason than, I don't know, a 1996 retrospective in the year fucking 2075 when I'm just like, oh yeah, maybe we'll go back and rewatch those movies again. We're in season fucking 89 or something.
Yeah. You know what? I am also going to give this a 1 because in hindsight, like, are there movies I want to watch less than this? And not really, even though I didn't even hate this movie.
No.
I just don't want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1 town as well, actually. Mm-hmm. So, Kyle, you have given this 11 out of 20 for a 55%.
Mm-hmm.
I have given this a 10.5 out of 20 for a 53%. Just down to the execution.
Yeah.
That really set us apart there.
That does feel kind of like a harsh score in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, it's just parts of it definitely hold this movie back from being something really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it does shine at some points. And I did enjoy parts of it. But it is a hard one to watch.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. And I just don't think the benefits outweigh the negatives.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think even with the acting performances, they were really good, but they kept doing the same things over again. Like, I was only captivated by Bess's talking to God the first couple times.
Me too.
And then it's like, I know what's going to happen in this exchange. This is a skippable kind of thing.
Mm.
And there's only so many times that you can have Dodo get upset with Bess before it's like, we know what's happening.
Yeah.
So it was just too stretched out. That's the way it is. Kyle, I'm going to give you your ranking. You're going to tell me where to put this movie in that ranking.
Sure.
So from top to bottom, you have Fargo, Scream, Swingers, Jerry Maguire, Independence Day, Secrets and Lies, Bottle Rocket, Trainspotting, Twister, Primal Fear, The People vs. Larry Flint, A Time to Kill, Lone Star, Happy Gilmore, Marvin's Room. Where do you even begin? This is such a hard one to factor into rankings.
It really is.
I like did all of my scoring for this beforehand. Did not do my ranking beforehand. I just needed the pressure of the moment to tell me what to do with it because I didn't know.
Yeah, because like as you're listing those movies, I'm in my head thinking like, is this better? No, is this better? No, is this better? And it got into the kind of Primal Fear, Larry Flint area. And I was like, maybe this is better than those in some aspects, but not in others. Where's Lone Star?
Lone Star is 13th for some reason. Couldn't tell you why.
I think this might just have the edge over Lone Star.
Below A Time to Kill, above Lone Star to be the new number 13. Is that the call?
I think that's the call. That's the
play. All right. For my rankings, I have Fargo, Scream, Swingers, Lone Star, Independence Day, Secrets and Lies, Jerry Maguire, Bottle Rocket, Trainspotting, Primal Fear, Twister, A Time to Kill, Happy Gilmore, The People vs. Larry Flint, Marvin's Room. I'm going to put this one higher because I do respect that this was an artistic vision. Mm-hmm. It was seen through. There were some really good performances. They had some interesting themes throughout the movie that did keep me interested to see like how they're going to resolve a couple things. Because of that, I'm going to put this. It's somewhere in the Trainspotting, Bottle Rocket, Jerry Maguire area. And I think I'm going to put it above Bottle Rocket.
Oh, wow.
I think I'm going to do that. I kind of regretted not putting Trainspotting above Bottle Rocket, but I'm not going to change a call too late now.
That's cool.
I'm going to put this will be my new number 8, just below Jerry Maguire, just above Bottle Rocket will be Breaking the Waves.
Cool.
That's going to bring us to some fun Letterboxd reviews now, I do believe.
Was this like a highly reviewed one on Letterboxd, or were you struggling to find reviews?
I thought there wouldn't be that many, and that the ones that were there would be just like people treating it like it's a art, like a film class Dropbox for submissions for essays. There was some good ones in here. I didn't go that deep, and I found some quality ones pretty quick.
Sweet.
So people who watch this have some good reviewing going on.
All right.
Although there are a lot of essays in there. A lot of them I'm just like, no, this is four paragraphs. I'm not reading this.
Yeah.
All right. Start off with Tony. 4 stars. Lars von Trier's films got me through a bad time in my life by making it worse.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's quality.
There's some bangers in here.
Oh, good shit.
Megan, 3.5 stars. Well, it's no Punch Drunk Love. I guess not.
Is that like her favorite film? And it's just like every movie from there is like, well, it's no Punch Drunk Love.
I don't know, but I heard that. I thought, what a funny movie. Like, what a weird movie to compare this to, because there's nothing in common. Like,
no. And like, you should go through her letterbox and see if every other movie is just like, well, it's not Punch Drunk Love. And then find her one review of Punch Drunk Love. And she's like, this is actually Punch Drunk Love.
This is Punch Drunk Love. This is pretty good. Disgustipated, 4 stars. I feel like I just watched Lars von Trier kick a small puppy to death.
Oh, no.
People were having an emotional time in the reviews. A lot of people came here feeling bad and feeling worse afterwards. Yeah.
Did you watch that video I sent you about Lars von Trier doing press for Melancholia? And he was basically saying, like, I understand Hitler.
No.
Did you not see that? Oh my God.
I don't remember you sending that. I might have just missed that.
Yeah. It's got some decent length to it because this man dug himself into a hole sitting right next to Kirsten Dunst. I felt so bad for her.
Oh,
he was just sitting
God.
There just like talking about how he found out that he wasn't as much Jewish and that he's, you know, his ancestors were Nazis and that he was like, oh, yeah, I understand Hitler and just like stuff like that. I was like, what the dude, stop.
No. If,
and he kept like just making horrible joke after horrible joke and digging himself deeper and deeper into a hole. And just you could see the pain on Kirsten Dunst's face as she sat next to this man potentially ruining his career.
Yeah, and probably hers too, just for being in the room.
Yeah.
Because every shot of him saying these atrocious things is going to have her there. And people are just going to think she's involved by association.
Well, it didn't help that like this was a movie that she was probably really hoping would be like an Oscar nominee for her or like a win for her. And so like anytime you get like politics involved and stuff like that, that could affect, it just hurts her chances. I don't think she won, but like, oof, I feel bad.
Yeah.
And Stellan Skarsgård's there too, and he's just looking across the like the panel. He's like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I didn't watch that. That's brutal.
Yeah.
No sentence has ever done good starting with, well, Hitler might have been right. You know, maybe hit some points. No, you've throw out that entire statement you're about to make. Go back to the writing board. You got it wrong.
Yeah, so that's some supplementary material for this episode.
Yeah. All right, one more fun letterbox. I want to end on this one. So the person's name is Former Movie Lover, and they didn't give it any stars. They just gave it like a review. Whenever I saw this poster, I thought the people in it were two women, so I was expecting this to be a gay movie. However, much to my surprise, that's not a lesbian. It's Stellan Skarsgård.
That man has the worst haircut in this movie.
It's bad. It's bad.
He needs to have at least like close, like short hair or nothing. Cause like his hair does not work.
They could have bandaged his head for 90% of this, but they chose not to. Also, you spent $4 million in here somehow.
Yeah.
None of that was on helping the man out. None of that went into some like hair and makeup to make him look a little bit better and fix that hairline for a bit.
No.
None of that?
Nothing.
Wow. Where did $4 million go in that? Not quite bottle rocket area, but like, where did $4 million go? All right, awards. Kyle, what do you think this might have been nominated for?
Well, I have to confess that I know what it's nominated for.
Oh, you're going to be really good at guessing then. You're going to be on the
It was
nail.
Best actress, right?
For it Emily was Watson. Best actress for Emily Watson. She did not win.
No. She was deserving, I think.
Oh, yeah. She deserved that nod.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She gave a really good, and it's a lot. So much of her character is in the facial expressions and reactions to people.
Yeah.
I didn't think her dialogue was that crazy good or anything.
No.
It was fine. But it was just the subtle things that she did. Because when people were saying that, you know, she's not all mentally well there, she clearly can't control her emotions, you already kind of know because of how she portrays this character.
Yeah. Sometimes she has like a blank stare that like is just kind of putting that across. And also her change in expression when she switches character per se from herself to her like channeling God is like, it's a pretty good performance there too.
Yeah. It just, she does so much with how she smiles. That I was really impressed with, like, overall, the whole thing.
Yeah. Is that the only one, though?
That was the only Oscar nomination. Yeah. But other notable awards, at the Bodil Awards, which is the Danish Film Festival, Breaking the Waves cleaned up. It won the Best Danish Film.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not really surprising. Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. Also
for
nominated.
For Dodo's actress?
Pardon?
For Dodo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Katrine Cartilage?
Cartilage. I just remember you saying cartilage, and
cartilage.
I was like, oh, muscles, bones.
I mean, she does connect this movie all together.
There you go.
That
you got there.
Yeah. So this movie was also nominated for Best Motion Picture Drama and Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama at the Golden Globes. Didn't win either of them.
Oh, it was nominated for Best Motion Picture Drama.
At Golden Globes, yeah.
Interesting.
Didn't win, though.
No, I didn't. No. Not surprised.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense. I can, yeah. That,
yeah. I'm more impressed that it got more acclaim because I think this could easily have been in one of those like artful movies, art house that falls under the radar. And so it's good that it did get some acclaim. I think it deserves that sort of acclaim, especially with the Academy Award nomination for Emily Watson. I think she deserved that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is a sleeper too, where it kind of gets more highly regarded afterwards because it's part of like a film trilogy as well, like an unofficial one.
Oh.
It's like Lars von Trier put three movies together where it's kind of considered a trilogy because they're all like spiritually connected.
Right.
Not in any amount of characters or plot, but just like tone and everything connects the three of them. So I think like it became a super art house kind of artsy thing and people went back and watched other ones later and then it kind of became like a bigger thing. That's a lot of conjecture. I don't know. I do know they're considered like part of a trilogy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting fact.
Well,
do you have any more?
I do have two more. That was all I could muster.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really glad you didn't know this about Emily Watson or I would have almost nothing to bring to the table. This was the theatrical film debut for Emily Watson.
Oh.
And she got an Oscar nom for it.
Good for her.
That's also super impressive. She was incredible.
Good job for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one. In a 2005 interview by Swedish journalist Stina Dabrowski, Lars von Trier said the following about the film. I was determined to write a story that was so far-fetched and so full of cliches that no one could take it seriously. But of course, the audience liked it. All you have to do is come up with something really stupid and it'll be a great success. I said, I don't know. That's not like a fun fact. That's just a weird tone to take with your audience.
Yeah, especially when this movie was not that great of a success.
Also, you lost $3.5 million on this movie. What is your qualifying for great success?
She's talking shit about a movie and how it was like dumbed down for audiences.
Yeah.
And it didn't, like the audiences respond to it that
didn't
well.
Like it. Yeah. Well, the ones who watched it liked it.
Yeah.
But no one watched it.
Yeah.
So.
Oof.
This that guy. Was
interesting
really,
character.
Yeah, he's quite a guy. Really, it's that quasi pro Hitler stance that really sours a lot of people to him. This could have probably tracked for making at least even, and then like, getting kind of Hitler apologist vibes from him. Let's not watch that movie. Well, Kyle, what else would you like to say on this movie, Breaking the Waves? Anything else? Sitting
Nothing
in your
really.
Brain.
No, I don't. I think I've kind of covered everything I want to cover. Mm-hmm. This was one that I left and thought more about, which is always a good thing. And I think I left maybe a little more sour than when I went back to write down the plot and was skipping through it a second time. I think skipping through this movie was a better experience than actually sitting there and watching it. But I think this is a pass for most people. I think you don't have to watch this.
No. This is a great 1.25 speed movie. It would be really tight if you played it on 1.25 speed.
Especially during the chapter cards. Yeah. Why do they need to be like fucking 5 minutes long?
Yeah, they're like little boring animated shorts in the middle of this movie that's already too long.
Yeah, it's like Lars von Trier found a song he really liked. Mm-hmm. One of like Elton John or David Bowie or something. And just wanted to play the entire song in his movie at some point. Mm-hmm. And so he's just like, oh, let's throw it in the chapter card. Should we cut? No.
No. Cut. God, no.
Anybody
just want to reiterate, you can hold a camera steadier than that. I believe in you. Don't know how this happened. Someone got tripped and just kept shooting while falling. And they're like, this is a style choice. We keep it in.
The camera guy just had a lot of cream on his hand. And he's just like the camera slipping through his fingers the entire movie.
The whole thing, he's just wearing rollerblades. You don't need that. that's all I got to say is just hold the damn camera straight.
Well, I want to thank you guys for listening to season one, episode 16 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Breaking the Waves or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review and share the show, then check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
All that stands between a city and a disaster.
The power of this chemical is way beyond anything you can imagine.
That's why you're coming with us.
Is a man who's never seen combat.
You're a chemical freak. I'm a chemical super freak, actually.
And another who's been out of action for 30 years.
Show us on the blueprints.
I can't. My blueprint was in my head.
That's right. Next episode, we're talking about The Rock. Not The Wrestler, the movie.
No.
Starring Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage.
Dwayne. Oh, never mind.
It's so funny. I think in the trailer of this movie, they're like, Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage joins action hero Sean Connery. And you're like, Nick Cage won an Academy Award? Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But it's just funny that they're like saying that, oh, yeah, Academy Award winning Nicolas Cage.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the branding that you see for him very often anymore. No.
I think at this point, his career was on the brink of taking two paths. And everyone who called him an Academy Award winning Nicolas Cage thought too highly and maybe chose the wrong path because he went a different direction after that.
I mean, he'll hold that acclaim. I mean, Academy Award winning Nicolas Cage stars in Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
So so go ahead and watch The Rock before next episode. It's on Disney Plus, so pretty accessible. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.